Grace to you and peace from God our Father and from the Lord Jesus Christ. My name is Dr. John Diamond. This is the show, America Unhinged, where we are fervently patriotic and unapologetically Christian. We are coming to you live from Cleveland, Ohio this morning. I have a whole route that I have to run here in Ohio this week, so I'll be probably coming to you from Sandusky on Friday. But a lot of good people out there doing a lot of good things. We are winning. We just have to keep this fight up. So please share Brighty on TV with everybody that you know. Also visit me over at AmericaUnhingedRadio.com. Both of my books are over there. If you have not read them, Fighting the Next American Revolution is what the book I wrote in 2006, warning everybody what was coming. And my second book, An Appeal to Heaven, is free actually on the website, both audio and PDF version, telling us how to win this fight. So we got a couple great guests for you today. And we will be right back after this break.
SAT123.com. They have put together a really incredible package, emergency backup communication systems, power systems. We've got sat phones, we've got solar panels, and also the big 400 watt solar panel behind us there. And why does this matter? Because of course, right now we are dealing with massive risk of blackouts. And the power grid is just failing, you know, intermittently, but it's going to get worse because we've also got energy shortages. Think about the lack of coal power, the diesel problems that are happening right now. If you're in the military or the National Guard or Border Patrol or law enforcement and you need to be able to function even when the power grid goes down, or maybe you're a first responder, rescue team, firefighter, paramedic, you name it, you need to know about this equipment. So SAT123.com, folks.
Thanks for your support of this platform. Use the code BTV at checkout for additional savings. BrightyOnStore.com.
Your own government has the power to activate a kill switch on all telecommunications, instantly shutting down all private phone calls and texts. An EMP weapon or solar flare can achieve the same result. Rolling blackouts or permanent power outages will also take out the power supply to cell tower antennas, rendering mobile devices all but useless. During these emergencies, how do you stay in touch with the important people in your life anywhere on the planet? The answer is the Bivy Stick at SAT123.com. The Bivy Stick is a two-way satellite text messaging device that uses a satellite constellation, not cell towers, to send and receive text messages. It works anywhere on planet Earth, including in war zones or blackout areas. In unpredictable times, the Bivy Stick helps you stay connected when it matters most. Visit SAT123.com to get one while they're still available.
Democrats are pushing a radical Marxist agenda, while weak Republicans let it happen. Do you feel helpless? Want to know how to fight back? Well, here's the answer. ThePrecinctStrategy.com is a free resource on how to become your local GOP precinct committeeman. Precinct committeemen help elect county chairmen, officers, and even delegates to the RNC. There are over 400,000 committeemen seats across the U.S. But what the GOP establishment doesn't want you to know is that 200,000 of those seats are vacant. We need America First patriots to fill these seats. It's time to fight and kick the rhinos out. Help take back our party. You can make a difference. And PrecinctStrategy.com will show you how. Take action now. Be a warrior. Help save this great country. Visit PrecinctStrategy.com now.
If you don't want to eat GMOs and pesticides,
life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The The Declaration of Independence proclaims God-given rights, and we intend to protect them. Working with people like you for over 50 years, preserving freedom and building a better tomorrow. Safeguarding the Constitution by limiting government power. We are restoring liberties, educating voters, and leading the freedom movement. Join with us. United, we will defend our rights. We are all Americans. We are the John Birch Society.
Welcome back to America Unhinged. We got a great 1-2 punch for you today, I believe. Segment one and segment two are going to really play well off each other. Sometimes that happens. Actually, a lot of times it seems to happen, even though a lot of times I don't intentionally schedule guests that way. Sometimes I do. But this is going to be a really great show, really great 1-2 punch. I know these my two guests for many, many years, and they are pre-COVID. They were people who were awake before, long before any of this nonsense happened. Before, I do want to remind you, though, Dr. Alan Keyes is available for speaking engagements. You can reach out here at imtv.us. I have Dr. Keyes speaking almost the entire week of Michigan, a week next week in Michigan. So he's going to be on the road quite a bit, and then he's going to be speaking up here in Pennsylvania. So reach out there at imtv.us. And we can get Dr. Keyes to one of your events also. Let me go ahead and read my scripture verse today, or actually two verses, which is really going to play into what we're going to be talking about today, what we're supposed to be about as far as the church is concerned. And we're going to read Ephesians 4, and I'll read verses 11 and 12. And they say this: "And he gave some to be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors, and some teachers." Now, here's why. Verse 12. "For the equipping of the saints for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ." So we have to understand the rule of the fivefold ministry is to equip the saints for the work of the ministry. And that's not really what happens in most churches. We just equip the pastors for the work of the ministry and the discipleship, and really does not go very far. So this is what we have to begin doing in this nation, not only in the church from a salvation and a spiritual component, but really just to go out and be the ecclesia. If you watch this show, you know what ecclesia is. The ecclesia needs to be out there at the gates of the city, being ambassadors for Christ, representing the kingdom of God to this secular world. Well, one of the guests that I have, and I've known him for many, many years up here in Pennsylvania, is our good friend Rick Crump, and he runs Kinetic Faith. Rick, welcome back to the program.
Hey, it is great to be with you. I hear you are broadcasting from the Mistake on the Lake, and the only question I have for you is, did you go there on purpose? Who goes to Cleveland on purpose, John?
Hey, I work for the John Birch Society now, so, I mean, we got a lot of great people in this organization, including, like, Alex Newman, but we got three great chapters up here in Cleveland, so we have a lot of hope for the Cleveland area, and, yeah, that's what I thought when I pulled into town and I saw the lake. I thought those exact same words.
Yeah. I say that in fun too, by the way, because I grew up in Columbus, and so I love Cleveland, love Cincinnati, love Ohio. So as a Buckeye, I can tease a little bit, just in case anybody up there thinks I'm hating on them. No, I'm not.
Yeah, we can definitely identify with that. Someone who was raised in Columbus also. So if nobody, and you've been on the show many times, if somebody is watching this for the first time, just tell us about Kinetic Faith.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, Kinetic Faith, the name kinetic, or the word kinetic, means to be in motion. And what we were trying to get Christians to do, people who claim Christ, is to put your faith in motion. We've become so hyper-focused on piety, personal piety. We've become so hyper-focused on Christianity being a self-improvement program. It's easy to lose sight of the fact that loving God, a big part of loving God, is loving our neighbor as ourselves. And when we see society burning down around us, and we see the chaos and the lawlessness should never happen under our watch. And when we see lawlessness growing out of control, what we're realizing is we're not really putting our faith into motion. We're not really putting it into effect in the public square. So our mission, and unfortunately our mission, is primarily focused inside the church right now instead of the public square, to educate Christians, but it's necessary. Our mission right now is to equip and mobilize those who claim Christ for the ministry of interposition, that the gates of hell should not prevail. We have three premises. One, the gates of hell are not supposed to prevail. Two, we, in, as a disciple of Christ, we have agency in that. And three, we are to do that through influence as salt and light. And if we work together, we're going to talk about it today, this being a team sport. If we work together, we can win, and we should be winning, and God expects us to.
Exactly right. Now, we met in Columbus here a couple weeks ago, and I sat through an abbreviated version of your training, about 2 hours of the training. I know it's much more in depth, but it was absolutely wonderful. It was eye-opening. And the thing is, it has so many applications. As a theologian, I can use that within the church just from a discipleship activity. I can use it with the John Birch Society, you know, with my chapters and training my chapter leaders how to do it. I mean, and then what you're doing. So, I mean, there are so many applications to this leadership training. That tell the people that is your job. You go out to the corporations and you train corporate leaders on this. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, as a professional management consultant for over 20 years, my job is to help large companies solve complex problems. And we always do it by starting a team. We go and we find out the subject matter experts. We find the people that are going to have the cross-functional responsibilities. And we form a team and we get to the root cause issues, and then we resolve it, and then we implement a solution. And what God laid on my heart over 5 years ago, we've been 5 years in August at Kinetic Faith, was this needs to go to the church. The church needs to function as a unit. We talk about the body of Christ. We talk about the members of the body, but we say them, if I may say respectfully, we say them in the terms of platitudes. We really do. We don't really function as a body. We don't know how to cooperate as a team. And that's a shame. And it's showing. It's really showing, because we love the viral videos. We love the individuals who stand up and say something. And we love to apply Bible verses in retrospect to somebody who did something great. But we don't know how to apply the Bible verses on the front end to instruct people how to go about doing it and what and how they should function together as a team. Too many, as we say, logos and egos out there, right? And you know, we often talk, John, about the sins that men struggle with, and you know, in the men's group, we all know about the sexual stuff and the job stuff and the family stuff that we talk about. But if we're getting right down to it, the big part that men struggle with is just stepping out and stepping up and doing it in a cooperative way. You really want to find out where men are struggling, put them on a team together. Get them to really show their willingness to step out and step up and work together cooperatively. And that's, if you got to admit, there's not too many churches that are working on that.
And that's the one thing that we've noticed for years. Now, I wrote my book in 2006 and went on a speaking tour. You know, it was me and Chaps Klingenschmidt and Bill Federer and Coach Dave Dobemeyer. A bunch of us out on a speaking tour. And the thing that we noticed was people come together for these conferences or these conventions or whatever, and then they go out and they don't do anything till the next one.
Drives me nuts.
And it drives me nuts too, because it really is. I mean, I'm a doer, so I don't want to wait till the next year to do something. I'm like, come on, put me in, coach. Give me something to do. Give me a play to run. That's what Coach Dave Dobemeyer always says. And that's what we have to start doing, because I think people are looking for leaders and they're looking for leadership. They just don't know what to do, and they don't know how to get plugged in. So the program that you teach is very, very essential for that. Again, I want to learn. I'm going to sit through your entire program and then use that at my John Birch Society chapters, because, you know, one thing I learned in Air Force Leadership School is true leaders don't create followers. They create other leaders. And that's what Jesus did. He multiplied. He sent out the 12. He sent out the 70. There's no way one person's going to be able to do this. So unless we're raising up other leaders, you know, we won't get through all of Israel, as the Bible said, before this happens.
Well, I was talking recently with a retired pastor, and he was going to a biblical convention, and he was coming in to learn more about our organization. And I said something to him. I said, "Listen, let me predict for you what's going to happen for this little convention you're going to go for this next week. You're going to have a lot of downtime, because it's kind of a semi vacation. You're going to have speakers and at certain points of the day. You're going to have networking opportunities. And when you leave, everyone's going to feel really good, and everyone's actually going to feel like they accomplished something. They're going to convince themselves of that." I said, "But when you go back, how do you practically apply anything that was spoken about?" And he kind of nodded and he acknowledged that. And I said, What you ought to be leaving with after spending time together for an entire week is a new mindset of how to work cooperatively and how to take action. You should be leaving with new skill sets. That's the thing about training. Training should not just leave you with information. Training should leave you with a skill set that you didn't have before that's applicable to what you're doing in your mission. And so we like to say that these events ought to be used to leave people in a different place. They ought to have advanced in their mindset and their skill set and give them some tool sets so they can go back and make a meaningful difference. And so that's the way we see events too, John. We'd love to see the fact that if people held themselves accountable to the results that's achieved after the event, how do you think that would change the events themselves? I think it would change them a lot.
I think when people come in knowing that, you know what I mean? Because one of the things that we have to do is we have to change a lot of people's minds just from where they're at right now. I mean, I just spoke at an event over here last weekend with Matt Truella, you know, and he speaks on unlimited submission to government, Romans 13, you know? So, I mean, there are so many lies that these pastors have believed, separation of church and state, you can't legislate morality, and you just want to create a theocracy and all these things. So, I mean, we've got a big task on our hands because there are so many people that have just believed so many lies. And I think those lies really have to be torn down kind of first, and then once they're tore down and you've convinced these pastors what an ecclesia is, and you know, that's where you come in, and that's when you're like, okay, now that you're ready to jump into this, here's what we do. So tell us a little bit about the program and what you actually do.
Yeah, sorry, there was a little bit of latency there on the audio. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds good.
Yeah, so to your point, I'd like to suggest that what we're looking for here is an opportunity to get people to work cooperatively. Let me share a couple examples with you of where I think teaching undermines cooperative behavior, but unknowingly, unintentionally. I don't think pastors are knowingly doing this. For instance, when we go and we do a lot of polling, we poll everywhere we go. We have live polling, and people can see the results on the screen. When we ask the people attending our conferences, you know, and our speaking engagements, you know, when it comes to helping others, I believe the church leaders, i.e. pastors and elders, condition their congregants to do what? And the options are that they condition them to either take initiative and work with others cooperatively, take initiative to work independently, wait on the direction of the leaders to tell them what to do, or to depend on the leaders to do it on their behalf, or to do nothing at all. 80% of our respondents say that pastors and elders are conditioning their congregants to either wait for direction, wait for the elders and the pastors to do it, or to do nothing at all. 80%. And then when we ask the same question to the pastors and elders, the answers flip. 80% of those pastors and elders say, we're teaching people to take initiative and work cooperatively, or to take initiative and work independently. And I show the results and I say, guys, you know, I'm not trying to say that definitively there's a problem here, but I'm going to say you got to have a conversation. Because when the congregants feel like they're in a hurry up and wait mode, and they're waiting for some direction and some assistance, and the pastors are like, "What are you waiting for?" and you need to go out. That's a pretty big gap. And so I don't think pastors do it knowingly or intentionally. But when you look at some examples, like in Matthew 18, right? Let's just, you know, we know Matthew 18 is classic passage about you know, the when your brother sins against you, right? But let's take a look at it from a different perspective. It's not just about your brother sinning against you and having to go to them in private, but it's a cooperative thing. If they don't listen to you, take some other people. Well, that requires some engagement and cooperation. If they don't listen to you, go get some more people involved. It's a team sport to deal with evil, to deal with sin. And then it goes on, and we oftentimes think these are separate issues, but then it goes on and says, whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, whatever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. Again, I say to you, if two or three of you agree on anything, it'll be done. If two or three of you are gathered in my name, I'm in their midst. What's the main point he's trying to make there? We think it's about a sin issue, or we think it's about a prayer issue. We missed in those five verses this theme that says, it's a team sport. Jesus Christ never sent his disciples out to do anything individually. He taught them to go out in pairs. He taught them how to work in units. Even when they went to get the donkey or to secure the upper chamber, he sent them at least two. And then in Matthew 10, when he sent them out, like everything that we're teaching people today is about their individual piety and their individual effort. And we're not teaching them how to work cooperatively. And we wonder why we're getting our rear end handed to us, because we look at the godless who are pushing a tyranny on us, who don't have the Holy Spirit, by the way, who don't have God, by the way, and they have all the secular evil on their side, and they're winning. Why? Because they're working like a team.
That, and I mean, I don't want to say the sad thing, because there's kind of nothing wrong with it, but as Christians and as believers, and, you know, most of the time we just want to go to work, we want to come home and eat dinner and spend time with our family and go to our kids' sports games. We just want to be left alone. That, I mean, that's really kind of the where we're at, where that's the other tough, side actively just wants to push their agenda on you, and that's their entire life. That's their entire lifestyle. So, you know, we kind of just back off and just kind of give in until, you know, push comes to shove, so to speak. And I think that's where we're at in the nation today. That's why so many pastors are starting to wake up, not only what happened with COVID. Now you've got all this transgendered nonsense and cutting genitals off. I mean, it got to a point that I think a lot of pastors were like, well, let's not get involved. And now it's like, look, we don't have any choice to get involved now.
Yeah. So we have a philosophy when we train: mindset before skill set, skill set before tool set. I can't give you a tool set if you don't have the skill set. I can't give you a skill set because you're going to fight me on the training unless you have the right mindset. And going back to mindset, I think that's where pastors can make a tremendous difference in the pulpit today. The pastor in the pulpit is really meant to convince and convict. If they can get you to think about putting his kingdom first, the fact that everything on your calendar and your checkbook should be aligned with what you're trying to accomplish on earth for Christ, and to examine yourselves, and then to the equipping of the saints for the good works to go out in the role of interposition, that's not meant to happen from the pulpit. You can give it a very inspiring, convicting and convincing sermon from the pulpit, but that doesn't tell me what to go do now to work as a unit. But you're right, John. It has to start from the pulpit with convicting and convincing people that their kingdom, it should be God's kingdom, not their own kingdom, and the excuse that we don't have time is unacceptable. But if pastors could do that and then work cooperatively with folks like us at Kinetic Faith, we can equip the saints to go work as a unit in the community to take that message out as salt and light and to make a meaningful difference. We have this model where we're at the center, and then around us is the core team of 6 to 8 adults who we spend all of our time, talent, and treasure investing in, because that's discipleship. We teach them how to function as a unit, and then they go out and they build volunteers in the community. They win them over, and those volunteers inspire the community itself. And we're winning the moral apologetic, if you think about it. We're not about rallies. We're not about protests. We're not about political campaigns. But I tell people this all the time. If you want the constituency that's going to put the representative in office that's going to do the right thing, you better start piercing the conscience of the people in the community to build that constituency. Nobody's focused on that. Everybody's focused on voter turnout. Well, how about we go win over the community as our job is supposed to be instead, and make those disciples?
Love that when I sat through your kind of abbreviated training there and you wrote that on the board, and I just saw how it applied to everything. I mean, if the pastor should be training the elders, right? And then you have the volunteers, and then you have the community. So, but that doesn't happen. I mean, I've been Christian for 30 years, and when you see what happens in elders meetings, I mean, it's just, I mean, there's nobody getting trained to do anything, quite honest with you. They're all just sitting around voting on whether, you know, we should, you know, resurface the parking lot or the roof or something.
Oh
like
my gosh,
that.
Right, like, right.
And it really is administrative. I talked to a pastor recently, actually, it's a funny story. A priest in town, said he wasn't doing a very good job evangelizing people. So I guess I did too good of a job, because he ended up leaving the priesthood and now he's working it. And now he's working in the community. He gave up his collar there. And he said, as a pastor, I was basically just an administrator. I wasn't doing anything, you know? And I think that's where we're at today. I think most pastors are basically nothing more than administrators. And unfortunately, it's because the elders and the deacons, you know, load them down with a bunch of stuff that God hasn't called them to do. And all of this needs to change. The pastor needs to be the shepherd, not a hireling. He needs to be training his elders and his deacon, that small core group. And then you get the volunteers from the rest of the church, and then you can hit your community. That's why we're just so focused on conversion and not discipleship, is because the model's not being followed.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. When I speak at men's groups, I start with this little story. I say, imagine you're an alien. Imagine you're hovering over Earth, and a being comes up next to you and you see a heat map, and a heat map basically tells you where all the lawlessness and the sin and the debauchery is. The heat map would look pretty red today on the earth, and you're concerned, and this being next to you says, hey, don't worry, there's an organization down there that was meant to take care of this, and they're broken up into three groups. There's a larger group that meets on a weekly basis. There's a smaller group from that that meets twice a month, and there's a smaller group from that meets once a month. And that larger group is the army that goes out. That group that meets twice a month is the one who's supposed to be helping doing the equipping and the enabling. And that smaller group is the one that's supposed to be putting the battle plans together and the strategy. And I asked the men, who am I describing? And they say the church. And I said, well, yeah, the big group's the congregation. The medium group is the men's group, and the small group's the elder group. I say, now, how much does that reflect what your church looks like? Are your elder sessions, are your elder meetings strategy sessions? Are they putting together battle plans for how to go back, take care of the community and protect children? Because to your point, they're primarily, their agenda is full of church issues, right? And if we're not making an impact in the community, we have to ask ourselves, what's the point? We're kind of a country club, we're insular. I say it all the time. The best indication, remember this, if nothing else, the best indication of your church's relevance in its community is that community's tolerance for evil. If the church can't convince people that the Jews are human beings and they shouldn't be on boxcars, what was the relevance of that church in 1938 Germany, to Eric Metaxas's point? If we can't convince communities to reject the type of evil that's happening today, our churches are irrelevant, brother. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to make the church relevant again.
Exactly. And that's one of the things, you know, Martin Luther King said in his letter to the Birmingham Jail, he said, you know, we become basically irrelevant social clubs. And that really is what a lot of churches have become.
Too
insular. I'm not saying that to be mean. You know, we come together in the morning and we have our coffee bar and our donuts. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you're just coming together and, you know, it's coffee and donuts and a little Christian concert where we, you know, watch a worship team and then we leave and do nothing for the rest of the week, we do really are kind of an irrelevant social club. So that's why I appreciate what you're doing. I think your message really needs to go out. We're going to bring you up here to Pennsylvania, upstate Pennsylvania, where I'm at, to help teach some teams up here. And I definitely want to use it for my John Birch Society chapters, because these are the people that have already had the mindset changed. Now they just need the skill set and the tool set, like you said. So tell the people where to find you, please.
KineticFaith.org, KINETIC.org. We are on Facebook also under Kinetic Faith. Social media, we're trying to get, we're on Twitter, although not real active. I gotta get better at that. But yeah, go to our website and sign up to follow us.
Awesome. Rick, look forward to working with you, and we'll have you on next time.
Thanks, brother. Take care.
All right. God bless. We'll be right back after this break.
Your own government has the power to activate a kill switch on all telecommunications, instantly shutting down all private phone calls and texts. An EMP weapon or solar flare can achieve the same result. Rolling blackouts or permanent power outages will also take out the power supply to cell tower antennas, rendering mobile devices all but useless. During these emergencies, how do you stay in touch with the important people in your life anywhere on the planet? The answer? Is the Bivy Stick at SAT123.com. The Bivy Stick is a two-way satellite text messaging device that uses a satellite constellation, not cell towers, to send and receive text messages. It works anywhere on planet Earth, including in war zones or blackout areas. In unpredictable times, the Bivy Stick helps you stay connected when it matters most. Visit SAT123.com to get one while they're still available.
This was made possible by Brighteon.com. After being deplatformed by YouTube, I built Brighteon.com so that we can speak. All voices of dissent are welcome. Join Brighteon.com now, post your videos today, and start building an audience there where you will not be censored. Brighteon.com.
SAT123.com. They have put together a really incredible package: emergency backup communication systems, power systems. We've got sat phones, we've got solar panels, and also the big 400 watt solar panel behind us there. And why does this matter? Because of course, right now we are dealing with massive risk of blackouts, and the power grid is just failing, you know, intermittently, but it's going to get worse because we've also got energy shortages. Think about the lack of coal power, the diesel problems that are happening right now. If you're in the military or the National Guard or Border Patrol or law enforcement, and you need to be able to function even when the power grid goes down, or maybe you're a first responder, rescue team, firefighter, paramedic, you name it, you need to know about this equipment. So SAT123.com, folks.
Democrats are pushing a radical Marxist agenda, while weak Republicans let it happen. Do you feel helpless? Want to know how to fight back? Well, here's the answer. ThePrecinctStrategy.com is a free resource on how to become your local GOP precinct committeeman. Precinct committeemen help elect county chairmen, officers, and even delegates to the RNC. There are over 400,000 committeemen seats across the U.S. But what the GOP establishment doesn't want you to know is that 200,000 of those seats are vacant. We need America First patriots to fill these seats. It's time to fight and kick the rhinos out. Help take back our party. You can make a difference. And PrecinctStrategy.com will show you how. Take action now. Be a warrior. Help save this great country. Visit PrecinctStrategy.com now.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The Declaration of Independence proclaims God-given rights, and we intend to protect them. Working with people like you for over 50 years, preserving freedom and building a better tomorrow. Safeguarding the Constitution by limiting government power. We are restoring liberties, educating voters, and leading the freedom movement. Join with us. United, we will defend our rights. We are all Americans. We are the John Birch Society.
Welcome back to America Unhinged. Those of you who have been following me for a while know that I wrote a book in 2006 called Fighting the Next American Revolution. And it basically, it came when me and Dr. Alan Keyes went down to Alabama in 2003 and stood with Judge Roy Moore in his Ten Commandments. And I came back and I did a three-year research project, which actually turned into my master's and doctoral dissertations about, you know, early America and what our founding fathers believed and how their activism, how their understanding of the rule of government brought on the revolution and brought on the Declaration of Independence. So this is something that's been on my plate for almost 20 years now. And a lot of people, you know, out there have been trying to do this. I used to travel with a patriot pastor, Lear, I believe his name was. He's now passed up in Massachusetts. He gave us a tour of Garrett Lear, I believe his name was, up in Boston, and gave us a tour up there and walked us down the road where the first shot around the world was fired and everything, Lexington, Concord, just a wonderful, wonderful history. We've lost our history, and that's the problem. That's very intentional. The government schools, they're not public schools. You have no control over them. They are government schools, and they've absolutely erased history. So we need to be bringing it back, not only just from an academic standpoint, but really from an activist standpoint, because, you know, what our founding fathers did, we can do again, and we can win again if we just apply that appeal to heaven. So please go to my website, download that Appeal to Heaven book, show you what our founding fathers understood about government and believed and how they put that into action to, you know, take a farmer, a nation of farmers with pitchforks and overcame the biggest world superpower at the time. So on our second half, we've got my good friend Dan Fisher. He is with the Black Robe Regiment. I had him out actually 6 months before COVID hit him and a bunch of other speakers, Coach Dave Nobemeyer, Bill Federer, Bradley Dean, just a number of great people out here to speak at events 6 months before COVID. So, Dan, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, John. It's good to be with you.
Absolutely. You guys are being very, very influential. I'm running into people all the time that are hearing about what you guys are doing there. I just had lunch with Stephen Mannion up here in Buffalo, Western New York. And he's got the Black Robe Regiment of Western New York. So tell the people about what it is you guys are doing out there.
Okay. Well, first of all, John, let me begin by saying that I've been a pastor all my life. In fact, I've been in vocational ministry over 40 years. So I've been in the trenches, so to speak. And about 2007, I heard about the Black Robed Regiment. And at that time, I thought, well, who is that? The only people I could think of that were wearing black robes are judges. So I thought, well, it must be something about judges. And then I discovered that it was the pastors of the 18th century, and in particular, the pastors that led out in the years between the First Great Awakening and our War of Independence. And they were the primary motivation. You know, we talk about the founders and the framers, but those guys didn't come out of a vacuum. This didn't happen in a vacuum. There was strong leadership in the years leading up to the 1770s, when eventually, of course, guys like John Adams and James Madison and all those fellows, Thomas Jefferson, finally said enough is enough, and they drew up the Declaration. When you look at those guys' correspondence and many of their speeches and their writings, you will find sentences and whole phrases lifted out of popular sermons from that day. And I'm not suggesting that all of the founders and framers were born-again Christians. Some of them were definitely born again. But I think most of them had a deep respect for the God of the Bible, and they understood that without morality, you cannot have a self-governing society. So you've got guys like John Adams and others saying that our Constitution was written only for a moral and religious people. It's wholly inadequate for the government of any other. You've got guys like Benjamin Franklin saying that the more vicious a culture becomes, the more need they have of masters, which he's referring there to government. So they understood that Christianity would either play a major role in keeping America free, or America would go right back into the trash bin of all the other, you know, governments in history. So these pastors got that. They understood that. They didn't think government was the answer, but they believed it could certainly be a problem. And they believed that government was an institution of God. And so when you look at scripture, there's three basic institutions that God created so that we can have a civil society. And those three institutions work kind of like three legs on a stool. You've got the home, the state, and the church. And those are all three biblical institutions. And the Bible addresses all three of them. And it's just as biblical to talk about proper governance as it is to talk about the family or the church. So these guys got that. They understood it. And they were preaching these things in their pulpits, preaching the responsibility of Christians to be good citizens, and that if they didn't act like salt and light, the government could be just totally wicked and tyrannical. And that's what they were facing with the British. And so eventually these pastors, when the time came, many of them recruited men from their churches and from their communities, let them off to fight. And the British hated them so much, blamed the war on them, and called them the Black Regiment, which referred to the preaching robes. Those guys in those days all preached in black robes. And that title has thus become the Black Robed Regiment. And it's really all about, John, pastors taking what they believe and connecting it to the culture and being salt and light. And so what I and Paul Blair do is we travel around the country doing what we call a Liberty Pastors Training Camp. And we try to teach the pastors the nuts and bolts of what it means to be a black robe preacher in the 21st century. Of course, you know that I also travel and do this bringing back the Black Robed Regiment presentation, where in period costume and multimedia presentation, I act out. I actually become some of those pastors, and I tell their story, the story that most modern preachers and Christians don't even know. They've never even heard it. They don't know that the church didn't just influence the founding of America. The church led the way. And without that, I'm convinced there would have never been the America that we know today. So, you know, we're trying, in addition to pastoring our own church, trying to live the way the Lord would have us to, we're trying to get pastors to re-engage and get rid of these lies like the myth of separation of church and state. And Romans 13 says that you have to give unlimited submission to government, and the IRS is going to come shut your church down. All these are lies, but they haven't been preached and taught from the pulpit in so many decades, John, that the average person doesn't know that they are lies. So that's pretty much what we're engaged in. And hopefully that gives us a good start from where we can discuss this morning what that means in a modern context.
Because when I wrote my book in 2006 and I spent, you know, a good 4 years and tens of thousands of dollars trying to get pastors awake, and finally I gave up. I basically quit. I told the Lord, I'm not doing this anymore. And you know, we fought for about a day, and he ended up winning. But I got home and he said, write down every lie you've heard come out of the mouth of a pastor. And I wrote down 12 of them. And you mentioned several of them right there. You know, we got to obey the government, and there's a separation of church and state, and you can't legislate morality, and our founding fathers were deists, and I mean, just all these lies that I've heard. So I created this entire course. It's like a 12-hour course that I've taught several times. I'm going to be teaching it here again shortly. But it does. It has to dispel those lies, because as our first, you know, guest said, you know, you need to change the mindset, and then you have to have the skill set, and then the tool set. So there is what your guys are doing is changing minds. And I love one of the quotes from the King of England. He actually called the American Revolution, he called it a Presbyterian uprising or a Presbyterian
rebellion. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it shows you very clearly that the king recognized who was the one leading this. One of the things I wrote in my book, and I know that you can speak on this, because I heard you again. I had you out here in Pennsylvania 6 months before COVID. But one of the things I wrote in the book was a quote from a pastor over in Germany that, you know, and I'll give you the abbreviated version, but he said, when Hitler attacked the Jews, I wasn't a Jew. I didn't care. When he attacked the unions, I didn't care. When he attacked the Catholics, I didn't care. He said, then when he attacked me in the Protestant church, there was nobody left to care. And that really is indicative of mankind. If they're not actually stepping on my personal toes, then they don't care. Well, you told a story that I never knew about a pastor who was involved, and his brother kind of wrote him a letter and told him not to do that. And then they burned his church. Tell us that story real quick.
Yeah. Well, you know, the quote that you just gave from Robert Niemöller is proof that if we don't learn the mistakes of history, we're destined to repeat those mistakes. Right. And so what you see is this vicious cycle that just goes around and around and around until someone learns and steps up and says, we're going to stop this. We're going to stop this cycle right now. So what Robert Niemöller experienced in Nazi Germany is exactly what a couple of brothers who were Lutherans had grown up in Pennsylvania, so your state, and their father, Henry Muhlenberg, had actually helped to form and found the Lutheran Church in Pennsylvania. Now, some folks may be saying, well, you know, today the Lutheran Church is compromised. Well, in those days, it was a very orthodox movement, and those Lutherans were Bible-believing, very committed believers. And he had a number of sons, and two of those sons, one was named Frederick Muhlenberg, and the other one was named Peter Muhlenberg. And Peter served in the Virginia House of Burgesses. He was actually pastoring down in Woodstock, Virginia, kind of out on the frontier in those days. And he was good friends with George Washington and Patrick Henry and people like that. So he was preaching the principles of Christian citizenship from his pulpit. His brother Frederick pastored in New York City. And like most citified preachers do, he separated his life from being involved. And he actually said that it was beneath a man of the cloth to get involved in politics and war. And so he condemned his brother Peter. Now, Peter was actually referred by George Washington and Patrick Henry to be commissioned as a colonel of the 8th Virginia Regiment that was being raised out of Virginia. And Peter Muhlenberg resigned his church, pulled off his black robe in front of his congregation, and revealed his commander's uniform, and proceeded to recruit men from his church and his community to fill the ranks of the 8th Virginia. And they fought from 1776 all the way to 1783. They were key at the Battle of Yorktown. They fought in all the major battles. Peter Muhlenberg's statue is in Statuary Hall in the U.S. Capitol there in Washington, D.C. today. The famous painting of the surrender of Cornwallis, Muhlenberg is in that painting. Frederick, on the other hand, you know, said, I'm not going to get involved. I'm too spiritual. I'm too pious to get involved in these kinds of things until the British came in and occupied New York City. And like you alluded to, when the British would come into a town in those days, they would either desecrate the church, turning it into horse stables or whatever, or sometimes they'd just burn the church down. And Frederick Muhlenberg barely got out of New York City alive with his family. And this was the pivot moment for him. And he became a member of the Continental Congress, and then he joined the Pennsylvania legislature. And then after the war was over and the colonies became states, Frederick Muhlenberg became the first speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives and is one of the signers of the Bill of Rights. So you can see how Frederick got pinched in a vice, and then he finally said, okay, this affects me. I need to do something, and probably should have been doing something all along. And he and his brother played a pivotal role. And they're just examples. I could tell story, like you said, you could tell story after story. In fact, I've done that in this book that I wrote on the Black Regiment that folks can get at my website, danfisherbrr.com, and they can learn the story for themselves.
And I would encourage everybody to go to that website if the producer can put it up. You had a very well done film,
yes.
I don't even want to call it a trailer because it's longer than a trailer, but not as long as a film. And it reminded me when I saw the movie The Patriot, you know, where the pastor walks out and says, I'm supposed to shepherd my flock, but every now and again, a shepherd's got to beat back the wolves.
He's got to drive off the wolves.
There you go. And I think that's what we've lost. I think that's what the pastors have lost in this country is, you know, when the Bible says your rod and your staff, they comfort me. The staff, shepherd the sheep, but the rod was a weapon
that beat off
the enemies. Anybody that would come after the sheep, you know, these shepherds were warriors. That's why David said, you know, God delivered the lion and the bear into my hand. I mean, you know, and that's not happening. There's a lot of kind of shepherding going on, but there's not a lot of defending of the flock going on. And we really need to bring that back.
Well, and, you know, I often say, because people will say, well, you know, I don't know if we ought to talk about these things in the pulpit. Well, the Bible is filled with these things. And if they would go back and read some of the sermons of the pastors of the First Great Awakening, men like George Whitefield and Jonathan Edwards and Jonathan Mayhew, those guys were battling with the same problem then. Pastors then were saying, well, you know, we shouldn't preach these things. So they would preach about Romans 13. In fact, I quote in my book where I deal with that subject, Unlimited Submission, I quote from Jonathan Mayhew, where he says, man, these things ought to be dealt with from the pulpit. And if we don't engage, the question is, well, then who will? If pastors and believers won't talk about these subjects, then who's going to? Is it going to be PMSNBC? Is it going to be the Washington Compost or the New York Slimes? No, of course not. The only ones who are going to speak out are Christians. And we happen to live in a republic. And a republic depends upon good moral people being engaged. And for Christians, that's being salt and light. So if Christians abandon the public arena and government in particular, you take the salt out, there's decay. You take the light out, there's darkness. We shouldn't be surprised when our country is decaying around us in evil darkness. I mean, come on, the Lord has told us what's going to happen. So that's why John, Paul, and I feel so committed to training pastors, because we believe as the pastor goes, so goes the church. And if we're going to engage the church, the pastor has got to lead. And most pastors today are hiding behind their pulpits. They're hiding behind their country club memberships and their good paychecks and their big churches and their staffs. And the world's going to hell all around them. And of course, you and I know that proper governance is only one third of the equation, but it is definitely part of the equation. And if pastors don't do it, I'm telling you, it's not going to happen. It's just that simple.
Yeah, without a doubt, because I mean, the Christian church is really the only institution that shares the same worldview that the founding fathers did. Well, are exactly. Supposed to. You and I understand that the Christian church doesn't even have much of a Christian worldview because of the government schools and everything else. But I mean, that's the great thing about what you're doing. That's the great thing about the seminars that you have there. And I mean, we're going to have about 2 minutes left. Tell the people about a couple events that you have coming up and that what you do with those.
Oh, I will. You know, we threw out my website, which is danfisherbrr.com, if people want to know more about what I'm doing. But we also have an effort where we train these pastors, and they can go to libertypastors.com, and learn about these training camps. Now, the reason why we call them training camps, John, is because we've had enough of pep rallies. We've had enough of Christians getting together and getting the best speakers in the country, and they cheer and rah, rah, ree, and then they walk out and don't know what to do. So we train these pastors the nuts and bolts, and they can find out all about that at that libertypastors.com. But we have two events coming up, one at the end of this month in Plymouth, Michigan. So if the guys are in that area, they could still probably register. The majority of the cost is covered by donors, so these guys only have to pay just a minimal cost. 3 days of training, and then the first week of November, we're going to kind of be up in your neck of the woods. We're going to be in Hershey, Pennsylvania, doing one of these camps. So if people want to get their pastors or their church leaders into something that's not a pep rally, but actually gives them the nuts and bolts of how to be a modern-day black robe preacher, then send them to this camp. We're not calling for war. We're not calling for guys to load up the AR-15s and go out and start shooting people. But we are in a culture war. And if we don't act like soldiers, we're going to get our tails kicked. And as you know, and as your previous guest said, as Rick said, we're getting our tails kicked.
Yeah, we certainly are, and I'll personally testify. I went down to one of your events in Orlando here about 2 years ago, and just a wonderful event. A lot of my good friends were there. Dran Reese and Alex Newman were there all speaking. Wonderful people I've been working with for years and years and years. So, brother, appreciate you, love you. Give Dan give Paul our love, and I look forward to seeing you at one of these events.
Thank you, brother. Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, please follow up on that. Everybody look at those websites, especially Liberty Pastors. If you got a pastor that can get to one of those events in Michigan or Pennsylvania, that would absolutely be wonderful. So we have a special guest host on tomorrow, and we'll see you next time. God bless.